Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What's up, guys? Week number 14, and here is the theme for the week. We entered Bizarro Land. Week number 14 was the week of Bizarro Land, where everything went in the opposite direction that it should have. And you guys will definitely see what I mean once I start rattling off who won the games this week, starting with New England over Pittsburgh and finishing with the Giants over the Packers on Monday night. It was an ugly, ugly week. We all suffered through it together for a week that allowed for, I think, was it 120 points? Our winner was somewhere in the 60s, so that's how bad it was. Yeah, I needed both of the Monday night games to go correctly in order to just have 70 points this week, because like I said, it was bizarro land. I was losing games that I had no business losing, but the thing is, you guys were losing them right along with me, so this was a bad week for us all. So let's go ahead and dive in. This is the Week 14 review episode of the fourth phase as we enter Bizarro Land. So let's get started. Welcome to the fourth phase, presented by Bears Talk Underground and Sports Drink Media. And now, your host, Larry D. I wish I had some eerie, like, you know, goofy music to play in the background to show you guys the extent of the ridiculousness that took place in the NFL this week. And, I was only able to salvage... There weren't many, actually, because I had 22 points resting on the Monday night games. I got them both wrong, as I think just about everybody did. I don't think anybody was out there picking Tennessee in Miami or, picking the Packers to beat the Chiefs at home last weekend only to lose to the Giants this weekend. But that is prime Bizarro Land right there. So, we had the Jets dominating the Texans at home. The 5-7 Tampa Bay Buccaneers are now the division leaders in the NFC South. And the one place where we avoided Bizarro Land was Baltimore, who were in a tooth and nail fight with the Rams, where the lead changed hands like 7 or 8 times throughout the game. And I know the Rams are kind of, they've won 3 in a row, they're 6-6, they're right outside the playoff race, but the Baltimore Ravens have beaten 2 of the best teams in the NFC, or at least they were at the time, in the Seahawks and the Lions. I mean, not just beat them, but absolutely thoroughly ran through them, like 38-6, 34-3, you know, those kind of outcomes, and here they are, fighting tooth and nail against Puka Nacua and the LA Rams. And it, thankfully in overtime, things got corrected because I went all in on the Ravens and I damn near got that game wrong. And, you have the wackiness that was the Vegas and Minnesota game. 2-minute warning in the fourth quarter, it's 0-0. I watched like the last 6 minutes of that. It was the most painful thing I've ever watched in my life. And I'm not a fan of either team, and it just, it was insufferable. I mean, there were a few games that did avoid bizarro land like San Francisco beat up on the Seahawks. The Broncos beat the Chargers, and New Orleans beat Carolina. Thankfully, the team with the worst record in the league did not just pull a win out of their ass out of nowhere this week. This would have been the week to do it, though. This would have been the week for Carolina and Bryce Young and interim coach Chris Tabor to get it together and put up 40 on the Saints in New Orleans to get that second win of the season, but that didn't happen. So it's about the only thing positive that happened was selfishly for me and my Bears was that the Steelers lost to New England, which virtually guarantees that Carolina will have the number one pick, which means the Bears are going to have the number one. The Bears / Carolina have a 2-game lead on the number one pick right now because the Carolina's 1-12. And thanks to Pittsburgh, who lost to 2-10 Arizona on Sunday and then 2-10 New England on Thursday, both of those teams are now 3-10, which means the Bears / Carolina. There's a 2-game gap between the number one pick and the number two pick with 4 games left to go. That's about the only positive thing pulled out of this. Well, of course, and the Bears participated in Bizarro Land by not only beating but dominating the Lions on Sunday. So I'm not saying that I thought the Bears could win, but I didn't think they would, you know. But Bizarro Land was in full effect this weekend, so that's what happened. So, all right. Well, let's go ahead and get things started. And as we do in our review episodes, we begin with the All-Out Blitz. Before we get started, let's play a fun little game here. See how many times you actually hear this throughout this All-Out Blitz, because it will far outnumber the... That's how bad this week was. So let's go ahead and get this thing started. All-Out Blitz for week number 14. We start in Bizarro Pittsburgh. After scoring 13 points in the last 3 games, the Patriots scored 21 in the first half to snap a 5-game losing streak. Meanwhile, the Steelers have the honor of losing back-to-back home games to 2 different 2-10 teams. Tampa Bay at Atlanta. Desmond Ridder accounted for 360 yards and 2 touchdowns for the Falcons on Sunday. But in the end, it was Baker Mayfield's 11-yard TD pass to Cade Otton that pushed the Bucs past Atlanta to win the game and take over first place in the NFC South. Houston at the Jets. We continue our trip in Bizarro Land, as not only did the Jets' defense dominate the Texans, but Zach Wilson threw for 301 yards, 2 touchdowns, and no turnovers to give the Jets an easy 30-6 win over the Texans. Rams at Baltimore. Bizarro Land almost claimed the Ravens as they struggled at home in a back-and-forth contest with the Rams on Sunday, but Tylan Wallace's 76-yard punt return put that and the Rams to bed in their 37-31 overtime win over L.A. Carolina at New Orleans. Derek Carr and the Saints took advantage of an opportunity to keep their pace in their awful division by playing the Panthers on Sunday. The Saints only had 207 yards of offense, but it was more than they needed in their 28-6 win over Carolina. Living and breathing proof that the football gods have a sense of humor took place in Vegas on Sunday, as the Vikings and Raiders played a full 60-minute game and only managed 3 points total when Minnesota's Greg Joseph hit a 36-yard field goal that didn't happen until after the 2-minute warning in the fourth quarter. Seattle at San Francisco. Brock Purdy only completed 19 passes on Sunday, but they went for 368 yards and 2 touchdowns. McCaffrey, Debo, and Ayuk all went over 100 yards as the Niners dominated the Geno Smith-less Seahawks 28-16. Denver at the Chargers. On their way to a 6-sack, 2-turnover performance, the Bronco defense made it easy on themselves when they knocked Justin Herbert out of the game in the second quarter. Russell Wilson was 21 of 33 for 224 and 2 touchdowns as Denver gets into the playoff race with their 6th win in 7 games, 24-7 over the Chargers. Tennessee at Miami. In order to keep their place at the number one seed, all Miami needed to do was beat Tennessee at home, where they're undefeated. Well, I guess no one told the Dolphins as they proceeded to blow a 14-point lead in the final 3 minutes to the 4-8 Titans, 28-27. Green Bay at the Giants in our final trip to Bizarro Land. We have the Packers and Giants. The Packers were good enough to beat the defending world champions on national TV and home last week, only to struggle and lose to the Giants on against the Giants and everyone's favorite mama's boy, Tama DeVito, on national TV this week. Thanks a lot, guys. Mamma mia. And there you go. There's our all-out blitz for week number 14. And I know that there were some in there, but there were only five of them in the 10 games that we had because you're also going to hear a lot in the pick six here in a few moments, because in five games in the pick six, I 4 out of 5 times. So yeah, it was a rough week. I went 6-9 this week. So yeah, it was awful. So yeah. So let's go ahead and dive right into that, and let's get this Bizarro Land week over with. Hopefully the ship will right itself in week 15, because it's been difficult enough making picks this week because there's like a logjam of mediocrity this season. Because on the AFC side, you have 6 teams at 7-6 now. And on the NFC side, with the Packers losing, they're still the 7th seed at 6-7. But there are also like another 4 teams or so at 6-7. And with the Bears and the Giants right behind them at 5-8 now. So, I mean, there's this logjam of mediocrity all fighting for the final playoff spots in their respective conference. And because teams like, the Texans and the Jaguars and things like that, they keep losing, everybody's kind of meeting in the middle, whereas there was a lot of top heaviness going on in each conference. In the AFC especially, people keep losing games, and teams like the Broncos and such keep winning games. So there's been this kind of meeting in the middle, and 7-6 is like the record to have in the AFC right now. It's like the NFL offices are going to go nuts trying to explain tiebreakers for why some teams are in and others are out, because there are 2 7-6 teams that are in the playoffs right now, and then there are 4 outside the playoffs for various tiebreakers and such, and that's very much what's going on in the NFC as well. So, yeah. Let's go ahead and finish off Bizarro Land with our pick six and wrap this bad boy up. Pick six for week number 14, Colts at Bengals to get things started. And I think this one overall kind of avoided the whole Bizarro Land theme for the week. And I know that the Colts had the better record going in. They were 7-5, and Cincinnati was 6-6. And if you guys remember, during the preview episode, this was the one that I was going back and forth on the most, because I just the Colts, yeah, they've won 4 in a row, but they were against teams like Tennessee and New England and Carolina, things like that. It was not a pretty list of victories for the Colts. All they did was play the schedule that was laid out in front of them, but they did not have an impressive month of November because they were just out there kicking ass. It's like they were knocking down the weak pins that were set up in front of them. The Bengals, on the other hand, lost their franchise quarterback to a season-ending wrist injury, and then proceeded to last week against one of the teams fighting for the top seed in the AFC. Their quarterback, Jake Browning, was like 32 of 37 or something very close to that. Well, he did it again this week, 18 of 24, 275, and 2 touchdowns en route to leading the Bengals to another win this week. And I got it right, because I did actually swap my pick before the game started. on Sunday. I switched it from Indy to the Bengals, and thank God I did, because it was the only game I got right in this pick six segment. So let's dive into the game. It's like most of the fireworks took place in the second half, but in the first half, or actually I kind of take that back, most of the fireworks took place in the first half where this was still a ball game. It was a 14-14 tie going into the halftime, but it's like the Bengals jumped out in front 14 to nothing. You know, the Bengals got things going on their second drive when Browning hit a little dump off to rookie running back Chase Brown, who made a move, found a seam, and 54 yards for a touchdown, capped off a very fast four-play 92-yard drive to put them up 7-0. And then the Colts were having some special teams issues on Sunday, because their reliable kicker, Matt Gay, who won them the game in Baltimore, if you guys remember, in week two, he had to hit like five or six field goals to win that game, hit the upright on a field goal attempt after a 10-play drive for the Colts. He missed an extra point later on in the first half, in the second quarter, when the Colts finally scored a touchdown. But you know, the Bengals took the their ensuing kickoff after the missed field goal deep into Colts territory, and were actually going to settle for a field goal, but a leverage penalty. You don't see it much, but it does happen. But a leverage penalty by the Colts gave the Bengals a fresh set of downs at the Indy 7-yard line. One defensive holding penalty and five plays later, since he's up 14-0 when Joe Mixon runs it in from a yard out. So it's 14-0 here early in the second quarter. And then the Colts answered with a 17-play, 79-yard drive where Minshew found Mo Alie-Cox for a one-yard touchdown pass, and that's where Matt Gay hooked the extra point. So it's 14-6. Second play of the ensuing drive, Ronnie Harrison gets picked off, or picks off Browning, and runs it back for a touchdown, 36 yards, and the two-point try was successful because apparently Shane Steichen didn't trust his kicker anymore. Tied the game at 14, and at the two-minute warning, the Bengals were up 14-0. 29 seconds later, it was tied at 14. So, and then, you know, in the second half was all Bengals. They scored their touchdowns on their first two drives of the half. The first one was 11-yard TD pass from Browning to Tanner Hudson. The second one was later on in the third quarter, where Browning himself ran it in from a 1 yard out. And you know, the Colts just kept shooting themselves in the foot. They muffed a punt at one point. Penalties nullified a touchdown, you know, followed by an interception on that drive as well. So it's just like Indy just could not win for losing in the second half, because it was a 20-0 shutout by the Bengals in the second half as they cruise to a 34-14 win over the Colts. And you know, it's now like I was talking about that 7-6 logjam. Here are two teams sitting at 7-6. Indy is just barely hanging on to their playoff spot. I mean, I think they fell down a couple of notches. I think they were like 5 or 6, and now they're definitely 7, I think, at this point. Let me pull it up here real quick. In the AFC, yeah, they've dropped to 7. Or actually, I think they were 7. But, yeah. Yeah, I don't remember, actually. I think they were, I think the Cleveland Browns leapfrogged them both, because the Browns won, as we'll talk about here in a few minutes. But the Browns won, they're 8-5. They're the 5 seed. Pittsburgh and Indy at 7-6 are 6-7 right now. And then at 8, you have the Texans, who lost again to the Jets, as you heard in the all out, 30-6, because they didn't lose. They got their asses kicked out there. You know, it was like the Jets finally were the team that everyone thought they were going to be this season. 30 points on offense, dominance on defense, but they're still 5-8. You know, it's like the possibility of Aaron Rodgers coming back, and that clock is ticking, by the way. But anyway, you got Houston at 7-6, the Broncos at 7-6, and the Bengals and the Bills, who all won this weekend. The Broncos, the Bengals, the Bills all won, are 7-6 as well. So, yeah. Buffalo is at the bottom because of their conference record. They're 4-5. The Bengals have a head-to-head, so they're, even though they're 3-6 in conference, they're ahead of the Bills because of a head-to-head tiebreaker. The Broncos are 4-5 in the conference, and the Texans, the reason they're in front of them all is that they have wins over Houston, or Houston has a head-to-head win over the Broncos, and they're a 500 team as far as the conference records are concerned. So they're the first team in if somebody falls out. If, you know, if Indy keeps losing, Texans will be the first one to go in. And actually, I think they have a that Week 18 matchup is actually between the Colts and the Texans, so that could be interesting. But in the one game that I got right here in the pick six, and it's because I changed my pick at the last minute, the Bengals beat the Colts. Jacksonville at Cleveland, another game. You know, Jacksonville 8-4 atop the NFC or AFC South. Cleveland at 7-5 in the playoff hunt. You know, actually in the playoffs if the season were to end today. It's like, I swear they were the 7th seed, and by winning they leapfrogged Pittsburgh and Indy to the 5 seed. Maybe they were the 5 seed all along. I don't remember, but anyway, in this ball game, you have Trevor Lawrence. He actually did play despite suffering the high ankle sprain against the Bengals on Monday night last week. He practiced and played on Sunday. And from watching the game, I didn't really see how the ankle injury was hindering him. I never saw a moment where he was limping or where I felt like his mobility or anything like that was compromised by the injury. But he had a terrible day on Sunday. It was not a good day for Lawrence. He had an uncharacteristic turnover-happy performance in this one. And, you know, Lawrence was 28 of 50, so just barely over 50% completions. He did throw 3 touchdown passes, but more importantly, he threw 3 interceptions. And, yeah, I was going to say, it's like, because they fumbled the ball once as well, but that wasn't them. Or it wasn't him, I should say. So 3 interceptions for Trevor Lawrence, you know, which kind of almost nullifies the 3 touchdown passes that he threw in this one. But the Browns draw first blood with their opening drive. And guess the defense, the Jags defense with their pants down. It's 3rd-and-1. The Browns show a run heavy look, like 3 tight ends. Everybody is, you know, enclosed, you know, all 11 players inside the numbers there. And the Browns go play action, and Flacco was able to just loft it out to Njoku, who was wide open for a 34-yard touchdown pass. And Jacksonville's first half was an absolute horror show, okay? They had 9 drives because there were a lot of punts in this game for what the final score ended up being, 31-27. So you figure that's very much a back and forth. And the back and forth that was happening in the first half was punts because Jacksonville had 9 drives in the first half, which is a lot for one half. And you got 6 punts, 2 interceptions, and 1 touchdown drive. But because the Browns, outside of those 2 touchdown drives, were equally mediocre, it was only 14-7 at half. Because this is the game where the second half was all fireworks, you know. And the 3rd quarter was where we saw 2 teams capitalizing on each other's mistakes. The Jags fumbled to start the second half. The Browns turned that into a touchdown to go up 21-7. Later, the Browns fumble, then Jacksonville scores off of that to make it 21-14. Then at the start of the 4th quarter, which was the last drive of the 3rd quarter for the Jacksonville Jaguars, Lawrence throws his 3rd interception of the game, and the Browns put that one in the end zone to go up 28-14. Then Jacksonville responded by going 9 plays for 75 yards, and you know, Lawrence found Parker Washington for a 19-yard touchdown pass, made it 28-21. Unfortunately, that's as close about as close as Jacksonville would get, because the Jags turnover on downs that the Browns used to kick a field goal to put the game out of reach. It was 31-21 at that point. The Jags add a basically a garbage time touchdown with under 2 minutes to go to make it 31-27. For some reason, I mean, I guess I understand the strategy, but I've never really seen anybody do it before. On those last two touchdowns, when the Jags made it 28-21 and when they made it 31-27, both times Jacksonville wanted to go for two. The first time they had some kind of penalty where the Jags ended up just settling for the extra point because they had like a delay of game penalty on the two-point try. So it would have been from the seven instead of from the two. So they just elected to kick the extra point. That made it 28-21. But when they scored again to make it 31-27, they actually went for two. And I'm guessing that the thought was, if we get the – we make the two-point conversion, we're down by two. It would have been 31-29. We get the extra, we get the onside kick. Then if we kick a field goal, we can win the game. Okay, I get it. I understand it. But, yeah, that's putting a lot of faith in the onside kick, man. It just – it was a lot. And, of course, it didn't work out because those things are such a low percentage deal. But Jacksonville came up short there. The Browns and Flacco win one over the Jaguars. Because, I mean, here's what's bizarro land about this, was that the Browns and their defense couldn't handle the Rams last week. And granted, the Rams were in a hell of a fight with the Ravens on Sunday. But, you know, Cleveland should have won that game. And then they absolutely fell apart in the fourth quarter, only to come and face a team that's better than the Rams and win. So, I don't know. Which also leaves me with not knowing what to think about the Bears going into Cleveland next weekend. With the Bears playing as well as they have, against the Lions especially. But, you know, the Bears defense is playing outstanding right now. They're going into Cleveland. It looks like they might give the job back to DTR. I'm not sure, because DTR had cleared protocol and was available to play on Sunday, but I saw him play one snap. Like, he went, was under center on a third and one or a fourth and one and got the first down, and then Flacco went back in the game. So I don't know what Stefanski's strategy is. Is he sticking with the veteran to make this playoff run, because he's been in the playoff run a few times with the Ravens, won a Super Bowl and everything, and DTR is just a rookie? Or are they giving the job back to DTR now that he's fully healthy? He'll have a full week of practice, not in concussion protocol, so that he can play on Sunday. Personally, I'd rather see the rookie than the wily old veteran. Rookies are prone to make mistakes when they're under pressure and things like that. So we'll see. But, I picked the Jags, and Bizarro Land said, yeah, Detroit at Chicago. Speaking of my beloved Chicago Bears, I put this game in the pick six because, as you know, first as a Bears fan, and also as a football fan, I just wanted to know which Bears team was going to show up on Sunday. Was it going to be the team that had dominated the Lions for 56 minutes and had a 12-point lead going into the final 4 minutes of the game? Or was it going to be the team that could not score a touchdown against the Vikings last week, or the team that rolled over and died in the last four games against Detroit? And happily for me, but not for my picks anyway, the Bears were the team that dominated for the first 56, and there was a rematch of week number 11, so it's only been 3 weeks since that first game, and this game very much went the way the first one did, with the Bears pretty much in control throughout from start to finish, aside from a bad second quarter, where not only did the Bears allow Detroit to get back into the game, but they let them take it over and take the lead and the momentum into the half at 13-10. The Bears Won the first quarter 10 to nothing. We had, you know, two drives in the first quarter, scored on them both, and pretty much played keep away with the football because both drives were over 5 minutes long. I think the Lions were like five plays and out on their first drive, and then their second drive finished the first quarter. And, the second quarter got off to a good start for the Bears. Jalen Johnson intercepted Jared Goff's pass on fourth down. The Lions went for it on fourth down. Jalen Johnson picks off Jared Goff. He actually caught it this time because he dropped a pick six in the first game. But he catches it, and it was kind of like in this moment. This wasn't the moment where the momentum shifted, but it was the moment where things started going badly for the Bears. Was the moment directly after Jalen Johnson intercepted the ball. Eddie Jackson, our other safety, our safety comes in and gets called for a block in the back on the play because Johnson intercepts the football at about the 10-15-yard line, runs it all the way to the 40. So we're looking at outstanding field position. We've turned the Lions away with 0 points. We've got all the momentum. But instead, the penalty occurred at the 22-yard line, 10 yards from the spot of the foul. The Bears are instead starting with the ball at their own 12. And that drive went horribly. We gave the ball back to the Lions. On that one, they go 9 plays, 61 yards, and Jahmyr Gibbs runs it in from 12 yards out, 10-6. And then at the end of the half, an 11-play, 53-yard drive where Goff found Josh Reynolds from 8 yards out for a touchdown to make it 13-10 because Riley Patterson, their kicker, missed the extra point on the first touchdown. So it's like the second quarter was an absolute disaster for the Bears. It was bad. It was turnover on downs. And the Bears, this time it was the Lions that were playing keep away with the ball because the Bears only had it twice in the second quarter. They went turnover on downs on the first one where Luke Getsy continues to baffle me with his constant need to take the ball out of Justin Fields' hands in these moments where he should be the one handling the ball. It was fourth and one. We're in Detroit territory. It's too far for a field goal. And, I really feel like Eberflus was definitely playing the analytics game this week, or he was taking a page out of Dan Campbell's book, at least. But fourth and one, and we're under center, and instead of doing like an RPO where Fields can, maybe try to run to the outside, make the pitch if he needs to, or just cut it up and get the yard, we just do a flat-out pitch sweep to DJ Moore. Now, granted, DJ Moore ran for a touchdown in the first quarter, the first drive of the game, but that was more of a trick play. We faked a reverse. DJ Moore was the quarterback. We faked a reverse to Justin Fields, and the players, the Lions kind of went with Fields on that one, leaving a wide open lane down the sideline for DJ Moore to run in the end zone untouched. This was not that. This was a down set hike, pit turn around, pitch the ball to DJ Moore, who ran into, Detroit Lions player who was waiting for him. So maybe it was, it didn't throw them off that DJ Moore was the running back in the backfield. They just pitched it to him. He got touched. He got tackled for about a 2-yard loss. And on that ensuing drive, that was the first touchdown. Because that was the other thing, was that the interception, that was the drive after the interception. So that's where things went sideways. Was that even after the Bears made the interception, we get backed into our own territory after the penalty, the Bears still moved the ball 50 yards on 5 plays, and then the 5th play was that 4th-and-1 play where they decided to pitch it to DJ Moore. And that's where the momentum shifted, was when the Lions stopped the Bears on that one. And then the ensuing drive, they went in for the touchdown. That was the Jahmyr Gibbs touchdown. We punt 3 and out in our worst drive of the game. Justin Fields went back to pass on 2 of those drives. He got hit on them both, sacked on one, hit on the other, and we ended up punting, and that's where the second touchdown drive came. So it was bang, bang, just like that. You know, we were up 10-0. Now we're down 13-10 going into the half. But even though Eberflus is not known for making halftime adjustments, they didn't. I don't know what they did, but they definitely fixed it. The Lions got shut out in the second half. It was all Bears. Offense scored 18 unanswered points. And just to show you that it was our day, the Bears, in the similar situation as far as it was too far for a field goal and you didn't want to punt from like the 37 or whatever it was, the Bears go for it on 4th and 13. So it's not a 4th and 1 situation. It was 4th and 13. The Bears go for it. And just to show you that the luck in Chicago may be turning around a little bit, the Lions jump, the Bears get the playoff, so it's a free play no matter what. And on this free play, Justin Fields finds DJ Moore wide open down the sideline for a 38-yard touchdown pass. That made it 19 to 13 because Santos' extra point was blocked. He didn't miss it. It got blocked. But, you know, there it was. Bang, touchdown on 4th and 13 of all things. And, you know, not only was it the Bears converted on 4th and 13 and got a touchdown, but I can't remember the last time that the Bears got a free play and then did something positive with it. That is, you know, usually one of those situations where, oh, you know, Cutler threw an interception on the free play, but we get it back, so it's no harm, no foul kind of thing. No, we found a wide open DJ Moore, who put a move on his guy, was wide open down the sideline for the touchdown. We go up 19-13. And then in the fourth quarter, Jared Goff, on the ensuing drive, Jared Goff fumbles the ball, fumbles the snap. TJ Edwards, Mr. Man on the Spot himself, who had two interceptions in the last two games against Minnesota and the first game in Detroit. Both of them were on deflections. So he didn't just take one out of the sky. The ball was in the air and he was there to catch it, kind of thing. Mr. Johnny on the Spot once again wraps his arm around one of his teammates' legs, but also has the ball at the same time. And 5 plays later, Justin Fields runs it in for a touchdown to make it 25-13. Now here's where this kind of sends a shiver down Bears fans' spines. Now, granted, there was still 11 and a half minutes to go in the game, but we had a 25-13 lead, which was a 12-point lead, the same point differential we had on Detroit going into the final 4 minutes the first time around. And both teams missed an extra point, which means the score should have been 26-14, which is what it was 3 weeks ago in Detroit when the game went sideways on us. So you're sitting there, you're looking at this. It should be 26-14. Oh, man. Is this going to happen? Thankfully, no. Because the Lions went they went turnover on downs on each of their next two drives. The Bears sprinkled in a field goal. We got one final interception of Goff by Tremaine Edmonds. He was hit as he threw at the end of the game. Bears come out ahead 28-13. This is unprecedented in the Eberflus era, was that we've won 2 games in a row for the first time since 2021 at some point. And, you know, you hate to be flippant with such a thing, but when you went 3-14 last season and lost the last 10 games of the year, then proceeded to lose the first 4 games this season, and then in the last 9 games, the Bears are 5-4, but there have been some pretty ugly performances in there. You know, all week I said, I absolutely think the Bears can beat the Lions. As terrified as I was of the first matchup, I was anything but scared going into this one. It was just all a matter of, can they actually pull it off? Or will they? Can they? Yes. Will they? I voted no going into it. I hate to say it. I didn't trust them. I didn't trust them. Funny thing is, I'm probably going to trust them against Cleveland, and then the Cleveland defense will rip my offense to shreds. So I don't know. We'll have to see that. I smell low confidence points on the Bears this weekend against the Browns for now. But, you know, as much as I wanted to pick the Bears, like I said, the trust factor just isn't there yet. It's starting to turn, but the other thing about this season is, like, anytime the Bears have given us Bear fans hope, they've gone and crushed us, which means that we're going to have hope going into this, because not only have the Bears won two in a row, not only are they playing outstanding defense right now, they absolutely shut Goff down. They picked him off three times, three turnovers again. Three turnovers this week, four against the Vikings 2 weeks ago before the bye, four against the Lions in that losing effort the first time. It's like the defense is not only, you know, playing well, but they're also getting takeaways, therefore giving the ball back to the offense. The schedule in front of us is not the most frightening game we have left is coming this Sunday, and that's only because of the defense of the Browns. So I think Denzel Ward might be healthy enough to play this weekend, which is going to make things tougher. But, you know, not only do the Bears won two in a row, as you heard me mention earlier, at 5-8, they're only a game back of the last team of the Packers, who are 5-7 or 6-7 right now. Now, granted, the Bears are like the 13th seed because of tiebreakers and everything, because our conference record is not great. I think it's 4-5 or something like that. Maybe even 3-6. But yeah, if we went out and we go 9-8, which is, you know, sounds like an impossibility, but at the same time, with the schedule in front of us, it's not that impossible. We get past Cleveland and we go 6-8. Our next three games are at home against the Cardinals, home against the Falcons, and then against on the road in the rematch against Green Bay, which is a game that I want more than I want to breathe air for the rest of my life. It's just, we got to have that game. So it's not out of the realm of possibility, especially in the NFC, that the Bears could run the table and make the playoffs at 9-8. So 9-8 is about where I thought the Bears might land with their final record this year. And I'll be damned if we start 1-6 and find a way to do it. That would just be bananas. So anyway, I picked the Lions because I didn't trust the Bears. I thought they could do it, but I'll happily take the L on this one. Buffalo in Kansas City. All in all, this is a game where the defenses were beating the offense for the majority of the contest. And for the third year in a row, Buffalo is playing in Kansas City against the Chiefs, where they won the last two. But in, I think both of them were early season contests or something like that. I think one was a Monday night game or a Sunday night game, something like that. But Buffalo had come away victorious. That was actually the reason why I picked this game for a pick six, because it's like going into it, you know, Kansas City, who spent the majority of the season as the top seed in the AFC, has like lost three of their last five. Going into this game, Buffalo with their new offensive coordinator and Joe Brady seem to have kind of figured things out on offense, and scoring 30 points against the Jets, scoring 31 in a losing effort to the or 34 I should say against in a losing effort to the Eagles before their bye week this past week. And everything, but the Chiefs haven't looked like themselves, whereas, you know, they're explosive and they're dynamic, they're electric on offense. Pat Mahomes is growing more and more frustrated, which we'll talk about here at the end. But for two teams known for their offensive prowess, both were pedestrian at best on the offensive side of the ball on Sunday. You know, Buffalo had back-to-back touchdown drives in the first half, but got Kansas City back in the game when Allen, continuing his interception streak, resulted in the Chiefs' only points of the first half. Mahomes found Rashee Rice for a touchdown to make it 14-7 at the half. Then the Bills got a field goal to start the second half. They go up 17-7. And then the Chiefs in the third quarter look like their old selves. Mahomes is throwing the ball around to multiple targets. He found Kelce for two big catches, one for 16, another one for 22. And, you know, finished off the drive with a touchdown to make it 17-14. Later, the Chiefs tied it at 17 after a drive stalled in the red zone early in the fourth quarter. So what was 17-7 is now 17-17 for the majority of the fourth quarter. And after trading punts in the fourth quarter, Buffalo puts together a 12-play drive that resulted in Tyler Bass hitting a 39-yard field goal to take the lead with a minute 54 to go. So just after the two-minute warning, they hit that field goal. On the ensuing drive, and this is all that's been talked about for the for all day today and all that kind of stuff, it's where the controversial moment comes in. Second and 10 at the Buffalo 49, Mahomes finds Kelce for a big pass play. Would have got them in field goal range to at least tie and everything, but they would have been in great position. But the former high school quarterback laterals it back to Kadarius Toney, who runs it in for what would have been the go-ahead touchdown with maybe a minute 10 to go in the game. But Kadarius Toney, who scored the touchdown, was flagged for being lined up offsides. So the touchdown was nullified. Three plays later, the Chiefs turn the ball over on downs. Buffalo wins it 20-17. So what was the controversy? The controversy was the penalty got called. And I saw a video online today. Dan Orlovsky, the analyst for ESPN, said that he went back and watched the game, checked out the All-22, and Toney was lined up offsides like that four times, including that one at the end of the game. But so three times prior to that, Kadarius Toney lines up on the ball. It's supposed to be like a shade back and everything. Like he, and the funny thing is, nobody in Kansas City isn't saying that he was lined up offsides. What their beef is that, number one, it wasn't called at any other time during the game. Number two, the side judges or the line judges weren't telling Toney he needed to go back. But when you go back and you look at it, Toney wasn't checking with the refs to see if he was offside. He was merely signaling to the refs that he was the wide receiver that was going to be on the line of scrimmage, because that's part of every formation that NFL offenses run, is that there's generally a wide receiver at the end of the line of scrimmage that's going to cover up the tackle, making him ineligible and everything. But because you see the replay, somebody, I think a fan from in the crowd, shooting directly down the line of scrimmage, you see Toney come up to the line, he looks to the sideline, and just as quickly looks inside to look for the snap of the ball, and he's offside. You don't see the referee that's at the end of the line of scrimmage telling him or signaling for him to get back or anything like that. Toney never looks back at the referee again. The play gets off, and you know, the craziness that happens with Kelce and that heads-up lateral, making it an easy touchdown for Toney, it's all nullified. And it's like Kansas City is in a spot where it's like, okay, maybe he was lined up offsides, but you can't call that in that moment. And not realizing what hypocrites it makes them sound like, because that's how they won the Super Bowl last year. In that game, in the final moments, final minute of the game, James Bradberry of the Eagles gets called for that pass interference call that gives KC a fresh set of downs in field goal territory. And, you know, they kneel on the ball three times, they kick the field goal, they win the Super Bowl. Also, yes, it was a defensive hold or a pass interference, whatever it was, but you can't call a ticky-tack foul like that in that moment of the Super Bowl. It actually was something I was extremely pissed about. It was like this great game, this battle between these two teams, it's going to be completely forgotten because of this penalty called in this particular moment. It virtually nullifies what a great game this was, because all anybody's going to talk about is this bullshit penalty that was called in the final minute that virtually handed the game to Kansas City. And now here's Kansas City complaining about what they thought was a ticky-tack foul, even though it was a legit call. It's like nobody in the NFL office is investigating whether or not the guy should have made the call. It's like, if anything, they're investigating why it wasn't called earlier in the game. Because like Dan Orlovsky found out, there were three prior instances in the football game where Tony was lined up exactly the same way in the exact same spot. So, yeah, we'll see what comes of this, if anything. But in the end, for the third year in a row in the regular season, the Buffalo Bills have Kansas City's number. And in these games where I thought that the Buffalo Bills would be done, they would absolutely be done. You know, they're right back in it because they've been winning while other teams like Houston have been losing. Like I said, there's this logjam kind of meeting in the middle. They're one of six teams in the AFC now at 7-6. Kansas City, who was riding high in the AFC, is now 8-5, just barely hanging on. They've got a one-game lead on the Broncos in the AFC West at this point. I mean, could you imagine? The Broncos, at one point, were the joke of the NFL, gave up 70 points to the Miami Dolphins, you know, were a 1-4, 1-5 team, just like the Bears. They've won 6 of 7. They're 7-6, only one game back in their division. Wouldn't that just be the all-time kick in the balls for the Broncos to start 1-4, 1-5, and somehow manage to win the AFC West? I mean, talk about Sean Payton, and you won't be able to. His chest will walk into the room 10 minutes before he does. Like how puffed out that guy's chest will be if the Broncos manage to pull this off. But the Chiefs seem to be in some kind of spiral right now, you know, and especially they seem to be coming apart by how poorly they reacted to what happened on Sunday. They've lost 3 out of their last 4. You know, that one to the Eagles, they beat the Raiders. They lost last Sunday night to Green Bay. They beat Buffalo, or lost to Buffalo on Sunday. Thankfully for them, they play the Patriots and the Raiders the next 2 weeks, so they should be 10-5 going into their rematch with Cincinnati on Week 17. But, you know, for as shaky as they've been on the offensive side of the ball, the defense can only do so much. And unfortunately for them, it wasn't enough to get it done this week as the Bills beat the Chiefs. Final game of our pick six, Philly at Dallas, the big NFC East matchup. And 10-2 Philly coming off their loss to the 49ers last week. 9-3 Dallas at home, where they're undefeated. They've had 10 days to get ready for this one. After their Thursday night matchup and their shootout with the Seahawks last week. But so they were 6-0 coming into this one. The Cowboys continue their home dominance right out of the gate with a 10-play, 75-yard drive capped off by a CeeDee Lamb touchdown catch from Dak Prescott, of course. And, you know, the Eagles look to be answering that drive. They were moving the ball themselves, but self-inflicting wounds such as penalties and a fumble that ended the drive put an instant stop to that. And then the rest of the first half, the Eagles only had the ball 3 times, the Eagles only had the ball 3 times, period, in the first half, and the result was fumble, field goal, field goal, whereas the Cowboys scored on every drive in the first half. 3 touchdowns, 1 field goal. So they were up 24-6. And it didn't get any easier than that. The Eagles also fumbled to start the second half as well. The offense never got anything going as the Cowboys were all over it all night long. The only touchdown scored by the Eagles in the second half was a scoop and score in the third quarter by Jalen Carter, of all people. 42-yard touchdown in that game. But you know, the Eagles on offense went fumble, punt, turnover on downs, fumble. That was their second half in that one. They still managed 325 yards of offense. They were 4 for 9 on third down, which is actually pretty good. But they still had 10 penalties for almost 100 yards in penalties and three turnovers. So Philly beat themselves as much as the Cowboys did. I mean, kudos to the Cowboys for forcing a lot of those mistakes, but Philly has to be pissed about the effort they gave in this one. They never got things going off the ground. And like I said, Dallas deserves a ton of credit for that. Micah Parsons and the defense, they were on it and, you know, weren't allowing those big plays. I mean, because, you know, the only offense that they generate in the first half were field goal drives. They had to settle for field goals. They were able to move the ball, but it was a bend but don't break in the first half, only allowing the 6 points. And then in the second half, the only points the Eagles score were on defense. So the you know, the Cowboys really shut it down on offense, or on defense, I should say, and really got after the Eagles. You know, Hurts was 18 of 27 for 197 yards, but no touchdowns in this one. No tush-push or anything. The offense didn't score a touchdown in this one. Like I said, it was only defensive touchdowns. Prescott was 24 of 39 for 271 and two touchdowns. CeeDee Lamb and Michael Gallup both with the touchdown catches in this one. Yeah, it was utter domination. You know, I thought that Dallas had a shot to win the game. I thought Philly would win, which is why, you know, what are you going to do? But, you know, I was like, I don't think this is an upset by any stretch. When a 9-3 team beats a 10-2 team, it's not an upset. It evens the season series at 1-1. So now it's going to come down to tiebreakers and division record for these two teams. And we'll see how it all shakes out, because I think each of them is their only loss in the division this year. So, you know, and of course, now Dallas is in first place in the East. They're not the one seed because the 49ers won, and they're 10-3, and they've got the tiebreaker over Dallas and Philadelphia. But, yeah, Philly is 3-1 in the division. Dallas is 4-1 in the division. So Philly started the weekend as the one seed, and because of their loss, now they're the 5 seed. They're a wild card team now. So, yeah, they're the 5 seed, and this is the buzzsaw that the Buccaneers are going to run into if they hang on to first place. They're going to host the Eagles in a playoff game. Should be a goddamn bloodbath if that happens right now. But yeah, it's interesting. So, but yeah, the Eagles are 6-2 in the conference. Dallas is 7-3, so they're just eking out over the tiebreakers over Philly right now. So yeah, 7-3 in conference to 6-2. Yeah. Actually, that would be a little bit better, wouldn't it? But strength of schedule is a little... No, that's in Philly's favor as well. They just got the... Based on percentage in division... Yeah, it's the division record that's doing it for Dallas right now. 4-1 in the division versus 3-1. So the Eagles have 2 more games left in the division. The Cowboys only have 1. The Cowboys are still undefeated, and their margin of victory at home is bananas this year. We talked about it going into that Seahawks game where they had won 5 games, like a combined score of like 41-10 or something crazy like that. And, you know, granted, the Seahawks scored their fair share of points in that one, but Philly was a 33-13 win for them. So another 20-point win. Is like, wouldn't this be a great year to be a Dallas Cowboys season ticket holder? Every game you went to was a, you know, of the 6 games, 7 games you've seen in at home this season, you've had 6 blowouts and a shootout. So you haven't been to a boring game yet because your team has massacred everyone. And the one team they didn't massacre was a shootout where they had to win the game late on. So, yeah, this would have been a really fun year to be a Dallas Cowboys season ticket holder. But yep. So the NFC playoff race, San Francisco is now the one seed at 10-3. Dallas is number 2 right now because they have leapfrogged the Eagles to be in the first place team in the NFC East. Lions still hanging on to the 2-game lead in the NFC North at 9-4. Tampa Bay, the de facto winner of the NFC South pillow fight at 6-7 right now. I mean, have we had a first place team hang on to first place for more than a friggin' week in the NFC South this year? It's bananas. 6-7 there in the playoffs right now as the division winner. So right now it's shaping up that for the second year in a row, the NFC South is going to send someone to the playoffs with a losing record. Philly at 10-3 is the 5 seed now. Minnesota hanging on to the 6 seed at 7-6 with their epic 3-0 win over the Raiders on Sunday. And then Green Bay, despite losing to the Giants on Monday Night Football, at 6-7, have the tiebreakers over everybody underneath them. They're in the playoffs right now at the 7 seed. But the Rams are on their heels at 6-7. Seattle's at 6-7. Atlanta and New Orleans are all 6-7. And then one game behind them, the Giants and the Bears at 5-8. So, yeah. Very interesting situation as 5 teams are at 6-7. One of which is the 7th seed in the division, in the conference in Green Bay. And then the Rams, the Seahawks, the Falcons, the Saints, also at 6-7, right on their heels. So the playoff race for those final spots in each conference are heating up. So, because in the AFC, Pittsburgh and Indy are 6-7 at 7-6. And Houston, Denver, Cincinnati, Buffalo, all at 7-6, go for the 8, 9, 10, and 11 seeds right now. So things are definitely going to pick up. Every win is important now. Nobody has a comfortable, path into the playoffs. I mean, I think if you go back like 3-4 weeks, there's a deep cutoff after the playoff teams, but especially in the NFC, but not anymore. Not anymore. This is going to be an interesting fight to the very end. But that's going to do it, guys. A 6-9 week in the pick 'em standings for your beloved host, and 53 whopping points. And we'll see where that puts me in the standings when we come back on Thursday for the Week 15 preview. It's 16 games. Everybody plays every week till the season runs out. And I was just looking at the schedule during the Monday night games. And right now we're looking at 4 games in the pick 6. I'll see if I change my mind, but it was just 4 games that I found interesting enough to feature. So we'll have a supersized all-out blitz on Thursday if everything holds out. So come back on Thursday for the Week 15 preview. And until then, my name is Larry D, and this has been the fourth phase. So we will see you next time.